Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The use of fossil fuel is getting us all down in more ways than we're able to count. But there are other fuels to move vehicles and machines. One of them is biodiesel. Biodiesel is created from processed vegetable oil and can be made anywhere where vegetable oil is grown or used. Today we'll talk with Joshua Tickell, the creator of the Veggie Van, about the benefits of biodiesel as a fuel and his work to make biodiesel known and available. Joshua Tickell is the author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, The Complete Guide to Using Vegetable Oil as an Alternative Fuel. You may also obtain more information about biodiesel in general at www.veggievan.org. When I spoke with Joshua Tickell from his office in New Orleans, Louisiana, I asked him to begin by describing what biodiesel is.
Biodiesel is a fuel made from vegetable oil that works in any conventional diesel engine. The amazing thing about biodiesel is you don't have to modify the engine to use it. You just pour it straight into the fuel tank.
How does it work?
Rudolf Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago. The whole principle of the diesel engine is different than the gasoline engine. The gasoline engine works on the principle of spark ignition, where a spark ignites the fuel, whereas the diesel engine works on the principle of compression ignition, meaning the air is literally compressed to such a degree inside the engine that you can squirt just about anything into it to ignite the air. Because of that, it can run on much heavier fuels, like diesel fuel or biodiesel.
So it's the air that's burning as opposed to the fuel itself?
Right. We say that something actually oxidizes, meaning it combines with oxygen. So it's a combination. What happens is it's literally a reaction between the oxygen and the fuel.
So with biodiesel, what are the results? What are the benefits?
The primary benefit of using biodiesel as opposed to fossil diesel is that biodiesel is grown in this country. It's a domestically produced fuel. And if we look at why is that important, or what does that have to do with our state as a country, we rely on almost 50% of our fuel from foreign sources. Certainly that colors our political decisions and the way we maneuver ourselves as a country in the world, but it also colors a lot of what happens on a community level in terms of our economics. We're sending a great deal of our money overseas and to other means of securing our energy because we spend that money on basically its capital flight, which means the money's leaving the country. We lose a lot of infrastructure that we could be having in the United States in terms of jobs and social programs.
In other words, spend the money here at home instead of spending it elsewhere.
Absolutely.
I want to go back to what you said, that you can use biodiesel in a diesel engine without any conversion. Why is that so?
Because the diesel engine is designed to run on heavier fuels. It is able to take something like vegetable oil. Everybody's seen vegetable oil. Everybody's touched it. It's a heavy oil. Certainly not as heavy as the motor oil that you pour in your car, but it's not as light as something like gasoline. We take that vegetable oil, run it through a simple chemical process, and convert it into a very, very light oil. When you shake a bottle of biodiesel, it looks like you're shaking a bottle of yellow water. It's very, very thin. Because of its properties as a combustible element, and its properties as a very thin oil, it can run in the diesel engine just like diesel fuel.
So what's the cost of producing it, or the cost to the consumer at the pump?
At the pump, biodiesel is more expensive than diesel fuel today. We're seeing prices across the U.S. probably averaging between $2.50 and $3 a gallon. And most people will sort of balk at that and say, well, that's very expensive. I'm not interested in paying that for my fuel. When you look at the cost of fossil fuel, the cost that we pay at the pump is greatly subsidized because we pay, say, $1.75, $1.50 at the pump. There's another $5 or $6 in hidden costs in terms of potential military costs and the cost of importing oil from overseas.
Well, also, you're reflecting costs in your home state of Louisiana. Here in California, the home of Radio Curious, you're now pretty much lucky to get fuel for less than $2 a gallon.
So as time goes on, we're seeing prices across the country of petroleum increase while we're seeing a decrease in biodiesel. Eventually, the price curves will cross, and biodiesel is going to be competitive with diesel fuel.
Yet, when we're talking about the price of either biodiesel fuel or fossil fuel, or gasoline as we know it, we're talking about the price it costs at the pump. That doesn't include the price that it costs after it's been through the car, the contamination of the air, the decrepitation of the infrastructure, roadways, bridges, structures, and so forth. Does biodiesel have a different environmental effect than either diesel or gasoline?
Absolutely. And there's a human cost as well. When we factor in what the environmental impacts are of something like diesel fuel is extremely damaging to the natural environment. In order for a diesel engine to run, it requires that the fuel be lubricating. The only way that we've found to economically make petroleum diesel lubricating is to put sulfur in it. Of course, when we burn sulfur in any engine, we produce sulfur dioxide, which leads to acid rain taking away forests and natural structures. So you've got the environmental degradation that comes along with that. The human degradation with diesel fuel is, it's unbelievable. In the last 2 years, there have been 8 studies produced around the world, all of which conclude that diesel fuel exhaust is carcinogenic. They don't beat around the bush. These are studies from people like the Environmental Protection Agency, top U.S. research universities, top European universities. So what we're finding is we've built a transport infrastructure in this country around diesel fuel, around the world actually, around diesel fuel, but diesel fuel emissions are actually carcinogenic to humans. So you've got a human cost, you've got an environmental cost, and you've got all of the hidden environmental costs of extracting petroleum from the ground. Factoring all of those in using DOE EPA specifics, you're looking at the cost you pay at the pump being 10 times what it really costs to buy a gallon of fuel. 10 times less expensive at the pump than what you're really paying as a society.
Are those reports telling us that diesel fuel, not biodiesel, but diesel, is more carcinogenic than gasoline?
Definitely.
How much more?
Diesel fuel has a series of compounds that are emitted when it's burned called polyacrylic hydrocarbons, PAHs. With diesel fuel, the PAH content is considerably higher than gasoline. It can be as high as 75% above what gasoline is in terms of its carcinogenic effect when burned.
And what's the comparison of biodiesel?
Biodiesel is a reduction compared to gasoline, down 55%.
Using gasoline as the standard?
As a baseline, correct.
Well, Joshua, tell us about then the environmental effects of using biodiesel.
One of the big advantages, Barry, of using biodiesel is that it biodegrades faster than sugar. It's less toxic than table salt. We're talking about an organic substance that's basically come straight from your garden and can go straight back into the organic world without disturbing anything. So when we look at studies that show how toxic biodiesel is, we find that it doesn't disturb natural organisms. In fact, in some studies, it actually shows that biodiesel stimulates organic growth. So in terms of its ability to interface with the natural world, biodiesel, we start with an organic product. If it gets spilled along the way, it doesn't harm the environment. When we look at the emissions from biodiesel, we look at something that's much cleaner than diesel fuel or gasoline. From the moment that we make the biodiesel to the moment that it comes out of the tailpipe of a vehicle, we have a very benign fuel.
This week on Radio Curious, we're talking with Joshua Tickell from his home in New Orleans, Louisiana. Joshua is author of a recent book called From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, The Complete Guide to Using Vegetable Oil as an Alternative Fuel. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Joshua, you mentioned a few minutes ago that to use biodiesel in a diesel engine requires no conversion. Can you explain about that? What do you mean? Just put it in the tank and drive off?
The diesel engine, because of its design, because of its ability to burn a heavier fuel, is able to burn biodiesel with no mechanical modifications. The reason that is because the diesel engine works on this principle of compression ignition. Now, you can pour biodiesel into the fuel tank of any train, truck, boat, bus, airplane that runs on diesel fuel. The precautions that one has to take when doing that is that if a vehicle has been running on diesel fuel for a long time, say a number of years, there is a potential for sludge to build up in the fuel tank. Diesel fuel is known in the United States to contain a lot of contaminants. Those contaminants settle to the bottom of the tank and often lodge themselves on the tank itself. Biodiesel has a cleansing property. So once you put biodiesel into a vehicle, it can dislodge any sludge that's built up, thereby lodging the sludge in the fuel filter. So when you begin to use biodiesel in a diesel piece of machinery or vehicle, usually it's recommended to change your fuel filter within the first 2 weeks.
And after that?
After that, it's good to keep a spare one handy for the next month, just in case there's extra sludge that does build up and lodge in the fuel filter. But usually, you're good to go. Biodiesel can be poured straight into the vehicle. The other neat thing about biodiesel is that you can mix it in any ratio with diesel fuel. If you've got a tank that has 5 gallons of diesel fuel in it, you go to your biodiesel supplier and you say, well, I'd like to fill up with, say, 10 gallons of biodiesel, but I've already got 5 gallons of diesel in my tank. That's not a problem. The two mix completely.
When you talk about biodiesel dislodging sludge in the tank, is that occur on the B20, 20% use, or does it occur on 100% use of biodiesel, or both?
Generally on the 100%. What happens with the B20 is there will be some dislodging. It's almost like giving a system a shock versus putting a little bit of cleaner in it. The B20 has the cleansing property as well. It will, over time, dislodge things, but it's a much slower, much more gradual process.
So a person would want to have a couple of spare fuel filters along when the engine glugs to a stop.
Yeah, it's very uncommon that that happens. It really is. You know, as long as you religiously, in the first 2 weeks after using it, change the fuel filter and then change it again a month later, you're generally fine. But it's good to have one on hand just in case.
Is that something that anybody can do once you know how to open the filter cover, or does it require a mechanic? I presume it depends on the machinery as well.
You're absolutely right. It depends on the vehicle type and the machinery. Most filters are just spin-on type filters, similar to your oil filter. So it's an auto parts store item that you go, you get the filter, you spin off the old one, you spin on the new one, and good to go.
Why biodiesel for Joshua Tickell? What drew you to this?
What drew me to biodiesel is the fact that it is a solution that interfaces so well with our current infrastructure. I was a student studying economics and agriculture, looking for something that would be different or new that we could use in our society that would make a positive social impact. And I saw biodiesel actually for the first time while I was working on an organic farm in Europe. That was in 1996. It occurred to me at that very moment that what I was looking at had the potential to work in machinery that we already had the potential to be grown inside the country, made simply, and made on a decentralized basis, meaning that we didn't have to just make biodiesel in one location. We could make it in many locations all over the country, decentralizing our energy supply, but keeping it inside the borders of the country. So that all of that was very evident to me that first day that I saw biodiesel being used. and I decided to come back to the U.S. and follow it up to see what I could do with it.
How is biodiesel made?
Biodiesel is made via a very simple chemical process. Once you have the vegetable oil, which has been pressed from a vegetable seed, such as soybeans or sunflowers, that vegetable oil is mixed with an alcohol and a catalyst. Now, generally, the alcohol is 20% of the mixture when you initiate the mixture, and the catalyst is less than 1%. The most common form of alcohol used in the process is methanol. And the most common catalyst is actually lye, L-Y-E, N-A-O-H, sodium hydroxide. The catalyst is mixed with the alcohol, and then those two things are mixed with the vegetable oil. The entire mixing process takes about an hour, and then the mixture is actually left to settle. What we're actually doing in a chemical sense is, if you can imagine a long chain, and the links in that chain are made up of carbon and hydrogen atoms. It's a hydrocarbon. Three of those chains linked at the head is called a vegetable oil molecule, and the head of the vegetable oil molecule is actually glycerin. Well, that's the heavy, thick part of vegetable oil. In order to make vegetable oil work in a diesel engine, we've got to make it light. We've got to make it runny. To do that, we break off that glycerin, remove it, and replace it with a tiny bit of alcohol, because the glycerin is actually a very heavy alcohol. So what we're doing is we're taking a heavy alcohol out, and we're putting a light alcohol in. And it works magically. Literally, after 8 hours, you will see a clear line of separation. The top of your vessel in which you've mixed biodiesel will be that biodiesel fuel. It will be amber or golden in color. The light will shine through it very clearly. And the bottom will be a very dark substance, which is the glycerin that has broken off of the vegetable oil molecule.
Are there any side effects to that chemical reaction?
Side effects in terms of?
Release of gases into the atmosphere or other issues like that?
There's a minor release of gases. And when this is done in an industrial process, we take it up to a process level that looks very similar to a dairy farm or a beer brewery. It's the same type of process equipment, stainless steel tanks and pipes, basically. Well, once it's done in that type of a process, it's actually done in sealed containers, and all of the components are recycled. So even the 20% alcohol that you put in to make the biodiesel, much of it comes back into the next batch. So we're actually only adding 4 or 5% alcohol into the vegetable oil.
Well, to me, something's missing from this picture. We've got a homegrown product that is environmentally more sound by 50% or so than petrochemicals. It's easy to produce. There's no significant gas release. Why doesn't everybody use it?
Well, I would say that there are three catches to biodiesel. The first catch is that it doesn't work as well in cold climates. Biodiesel and diesel fuel have what's called a gelling point, which is the point at which your fuel starts to turn to jello, essentially, which means it can't run through fuel lines and things like that. Well, even though biodiesel has been used down to negative 20 degrees in Yellowstone National Park, we still find that biodiesel tends to gel at a higher temperature than diesel fuel, which means that depending on the feedstock, which is the type of seed or the type of oil that it's made from, biodiesel can gel at as high as 40 degrees Fahrenheit. That presents a problem for using 100% biodiesel in all climates all of the time. Now, the reverse to that catch is that there are additives that can be added to the biodiesel to make it compatible with temperatures much colder than 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
I guess the basic one would be regular diesel fuel.
Exactly. And studies that we've done on biodiesel combined with diesel fuel, or studies that Europe has done, either the U.S. or Europe, have suggested that a 20% mix of biodiesel with diesel fuel does not affect the gelling point at all. Hence, B20, which is a very common term for 20% biodiesel, 80% diesel mix, is a very popular way to mix biodiesel with diesel. The first catch is essentially it's not as good a performer in cold weather yet. There are additives, and there are certainly more under development. The second catch with biodiesel is that depending on the engine type, it can increase an emissions called NOx, N-O-X, nitrous oxides. We've seen some studies in which biodiesel increases NOx emissions by up to 5%. In the same right, we've seen similar studies in which biodiesel reduces NOx by 5%, and Stanadyne and some of the larger engine manufacturers in the U.S. have actually admitted that the NOx testing that's done has a plus or minus 5% variance. So a lot of people who are interested in getting rid of diesels altogether will point to biodiesel's NOx record and say, well, look, it's not got a perfect NOx record. It's increasing NOx emissions. It's still not a solution.
But so do poorly tuned gasoline engines.
Exactly. And the sort of the reverse to that catch is in Europe, they spend more money up front on their diesel vehicles, approximately $2,000 to $3,000 more. That money goes into higher-tech catalytic converters. And the European catalytic converters are reducing NOx emissions 75% over what our catalytic converters are doing in this country.
So when you talk about a Ford or a VW or a Mercedes engine, are those higher-tech catalytic converters included?
Only if it's made for the European market.
Cars made for the American market don't have it.
Correct, because we don't require it.
Is that an aftermarket gadget that can be added?
Of course. It's basically a box that goes on the tailpipe. But the essential truth is until we require it, the engine manufacturers won't put it on there.
And then there's a third problem that you mentioned.
The third catch with biodiesel is really the infrastructure itself. We have a country that is built on huge pipelines that extend under each state that run from one state to another. Most people are completely unaware of them, even in the South, where we're very savvy in terms of oil production. Very few people are aware of the veins that sort of extend around the country that flow black oil from one place to another. That infrastructure is the same infrastructure that we could use for biodiesel. But in order for me to drive my veggie car from New Orleans, Louisiana, all the way to Ukiah, California, I would ideally be able to stop at gas pumps along the way.
It would help.
It would be great instead of carrying my fuel or making along the way. The truth of the matter, however, is that that infrastructure is owned and operated by a series of companies that have a vested interest in selling petroleum. Until they make a transition from being petroleum companies to being energy companies, it's very difficult for biodiesel to find its way into that market.
What are you proposing to make this social and environmental change?
My work focuses completely on education. I began looking into biodiesel as a hobby. It became very quickly a lifestyle after I drove my veggie van across the country, more as a proof positive to myself that solutions do exist. And I think in the first month of the veggie van trip, there were over a million visitors to the little website that we had at that time. So for me, what happened during that time was a transition from going, hey, does biodiesel work? Does it function? To, oh my gosh, it functions, and there's a huge population of people, not a small niche market, but a large population of people that are curious about this, and they want to see it happen. Since that time, I've done another veggie van tour. I wrote the book that you mentioned, From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank. We've done a lot of work over the internet and have just recently become a filmmaker, and we are making a feature documentary film about the people who are making biodiesel happen around the world, with the hope of this being a very good educational tool that we can take to schools and communities, and we can get it broadcast on TV, perhaps even a theatrical release. But the main objective is to show people examples of other people who are making biodiesel happen from a grassroots level.
What do you think is going to take to change it?
I truly believe that education is the key, because it's ultimately, whether you're talking about oil companies or gas stations or car companies, you're talking about a market. They look at market return for their investment. So if that market begins to demand biodiesel as part of the equation, then there will be a significant shift in the numbers, and that's what they look at, the bottom line. As much as people think that fuel biodiesel may be a little more expensive or maybe a little less convenient, if you would have said to somebody 20 years ago, hey, would you like to pay $175 for a pair of sneakers? They would have looked at you like you're out of your mind.
Yeah, but that's what people pay now.
Sure, because it's been marketed to be a good thing and to be a hip thing and to be part of our culture. So really, that marketing is a form of education, and our education is a form of marketing that we're doing with biodiesel. It's very hip. It's very centered on most affluent sections of society, and it's also centered on people who are very conservative. So we're dividing our educational efforts between people who make up the young market and people who make up the voting public, with the objective of moving the numbers.
Well, Joshua Tickell, this is fascinating, and I want to thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. Before we close, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Certainly, Connections by James Burke. It's an older book that came out in the 70s along with a PBS documentary series, and it basically details the creation of mechanical things through the ages and how mechanical things that we created at the birth of Christ evolved to become parts of machines that we have today.
Well, Joshua Tickell, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
Joshua Tickell is the author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, The Complete Guide to Using Vegetable Oil as an Alternative Fuel. The book that he recommends is Connections by James Burke. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. I'll give you the address in just a moment. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, suggestions, and ideas for future programs. Here's the address. Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And the email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.